Welcome everybody to another episode of Below Average Golfers by one below average golfer, if you can't tell. And we also have one above average golfer, the one and the only Mr. Michael Verska. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Caleb. Great to see you again. It's been a while. Good to hear you're feeling a little bit better, and it's going to be fun to talk some golf.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's dive right into it. Some big things happening over at Callaway, specifically in the putting realm with the new AI1 and the AI1 milled. I, for one, am super pumped about this. I'm kind of in the market for a putter. So I'll let you kick us off with that, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, we're really excited. I think everyone is generally aware of our AI technology and how we've used that in various product lines. It really started in drivers. And, you know, we've been talking about that for a good 5 years now. And, you know, it's we've continued to use that in fairway woods and then hybrids and into irons extensively in those products. We've talked about those and how we can make changes and do things that I think, if anyone knows my background, I mean, I designed clubs for the first essentially kind of 18 years of my career. And, you know, the AI can do things that, you know, smart people just can't do. Now, you need lots of smart people to make it work. You need lots of testing and data and analysis, and then to run prototypes and to verify it all. But now we've turned our supercomputer loose onto putting. And, you know, we just to make it really simple, we first started off on drivers. It was, you know, how do we maximize ball speed, right? How do we do that? Well, the goal is definitely not to maximize ball speed on putts. That's you know, we're not trying to knock everything off the green into the bunker behind. So what we are specifically trying to do is make the ball speed as consistent as possible. We're really excited with both AI1 and with this, you know, the new white hot AI insert and then the AI1 milled. Which is all new technology, fully milled putter that we're really excited about. And, you know, it gives about 21% improved consistency in rollout. And I mean, just to be really forthright, you know, if you hit every putt on the center, you're not going to see much of any difference, quite frankly, because it's going to roll out the same. But even really good players, including tour players, miss the center of the face. You know, you've heard Rahm and Sam Burns and Xander and others on our staff, Rozang and others, talk about that. Obviously, they're really good, but they miss hit putts. And, you know, especially when you get out to that 25, 30, 40 feet, that's when the real difference is going to come. You know, if you leave a 4 footer short, that's not on the putter, that's on you. But on those 40 footers, you can make a pretty good stroke and you hit it a little on the toe and all of a sudden you're 4 or 5 feet short. And that's what, you know, can really lead to 3 putts. What we want to do is, you know, we're not going to say, hey, if you miss in the quarter toe, you're going to make it. But instead of being 5 feet short, maybe you're 2.5 feet short, maybe you're 3 feet short, and you're going to make a lot of those 2.5 and 3 footers. Well, you know, for you, when you get out to even 10, 12 handicaps, 5 foot can be a coin flip, literally 50-50 for those players. So, you know, this is about making more putts because, you know, on those 10 or 12 footers, you might miss hit it. You know, we can get those rolling in the hole, but this is even more about how to eliminate 3 putts. How do we help players, you know, who hit a pretty darn good, you know, let's say pretty darn good 7 iron to 35 feet. The last thing we want is them to walk away with a 3 putt bogey, right? Let's get it. Let's get worst case scenario, that 2 putt par. And again, that 21% improvement in the AI1 putters with, you know, the new grooved white hot insert or the AI1 milled, is that's really what we're driving to. We really, you know, we've seen that performance over and over again. The testing proves it. Literally tens of thousands of AI iterations prove it. And, you know, now it's out in the field. It's on tours. It was at the Ryder Cup. It's really doing great out there. We're excited.
Yeah, well, you have me sold. It wasn't going to take much, but somebody that struggles with putting and very much struggles with consistency in putting, that's very good to hear. Very much looking forward to, you know, testing that out a little bit for myself. I was telling, you know, some of those around me that my putting has improved over the course of the season for sure. I've implemented kind of like a new, you know, I saw it on Twitter one day and it said, you know, don't take practice putt swings, just kind of let your brain do the deciding when, you know, after you get it lined up and then just go up and knock it in. Yep. And I've noticed that I've been putting a lot better when I've been doing that, as opposed to, 'cause I used to do the practice, you know, putt swings, but I was doing it more so to make sure that I tried to stay like online with my putter. It wasn't, you know, I wasn't making the stroke that I'm going to judge this to be 40 feet or I'm going to judge this to be 3 feet. Like I'm just trying to get that feel of just staying, you know, front back or front to back. And then it just wasn't doing anything. And so I was like, you know what, I got to try something new. And then I saw that and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna try it. And it's been working out fairly well, but there's still, I do have a little bit of Will Zalatoris in my putting stroke. So, you know, to hear that the consistency is kind of reined in a little bit, that is definitely huge.
Yeah. Really interesting. I just had a conversation with one of the top, club professionals, one of the top playing club professionals in the country yesterday. We were talking about a similar subject. I actually fit him for his new AI one milled putter. We just got talking about some of the science, not of the putter, but of the brain and how it works and how good players think. We were actually talking about that specific thing. He uses eyes up putting or looks at the hole from anything from about 8 feet out. So literally, you know, he kind of views even a 10 foot. I'm not saying a lag putt because he's a lag putt, but he's a great player. But he's looking at the hole from anything about 8 or 10 feet longer for to stay target focused. Think about a basketball player. And he takes no practice strokes. Think about a basketball player. They're going to catch the ball. They're going to get their eyes on the rim. They're going to shoot it. Think about a baseball player. You know, they're in the box. They're looking for that release point. They're going to react and go. There's some pretty interesting science around that. Now, I'm not saying it's perfect for everybody. I'm not saying that everyone needs to do it tomorrow. You know, it took him in conversations a few months. But it's really worked for him. Again, he's one of the top club pros in the country. I am not one of the top club pros in the country. but I have not taken a practice swing on a full swing in years. I got rid of that on the golf course a good 8-10 years ago. And I read a similar study earlier this year and it took me a little while. I worked through it at home first and then the practice screen and took it to the golf course. But I've eliminated all putting practice strokes as well. Now I still look at the ball.
Right.
But I look at the hole. I line the putter up, get the face, take a long look at the hole. And as soon as my eyes make contact with the ball again, I'm swinging again, trying to stay target focused. So, you know, again, that's different than AI. I'm not trying to preach a specific pre-shot routine to anybody, but in the same principle, you know, the target, the putt is the most important part. When you do miss hit it, this AI one and A1 technology will help you get it to the hole on those miss hits. So, however it works for you, there's many good ways to be a great putter. You can watch any of the pros on TV and see there's lots of ways to get that right. But there is a lot of good science about that target focus.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting concept to me because, you know, not to toot my own horn, but I would think that I'm a pretty good shooter when it comes to basketball, or at least that's what the fans in the stands at the alumni games told me. So, you know, maybe trying that would be something that I could, you know, potentially put in the game. I know you and I talked about the lead eye or the dominant eye putting, and, you know, that was another thing that I just kind of saw. And it was when I was in a dark place putting, you know, I didn't quite have the yips, but, you know, it was definitely like, man, I have no confidence when I'm standing over this putt. Like, I need to try something. And so, you know, that was about the time that I started reading that, and, you know, you gave me good feedback on that. So, you know, there's things that I definitely want to implement in this off season or try in this off season, just to improve. Cause starting at the beginning of the year, I think I was around like a 10.7 on the handicap and it got up to 12. And then late fall, it got down to like an 8.9. And so, you know, that itch right there, you know, that difference right there really, really is pushing me to, you know, want to become better. And I know Owen, even I think Owen's down to a 14 and he started the year at an 18. So, you know, seeing his improvement has made me want to be better as well. And so, you know, I'm ready and willing to try just about anything to help my game.
Yeah. Two things on that. The low hanging fruit. If he's a 14, he is no longer below average golfer. He is just an average golfer. Yeah. And you are officially under the below average category as well. So, above average, you are no longer in the bags category. I don't think you need to change the pod name, but
right.
Full disclosure, Owen and Caleb are getting it done out there. So, and the second thing, and I just want to mention this because, you know, you're in Indiana, near to my heart. I grew up there and I know the cold Chicago winters. You know, putting, two things specifically in the winter that even if you don't have a place to hit balls, and the good news is there's lots of more opportunities from indoor facilities or just having nets in your garage or your basement. But, you know, there's two areas that everybody can really look to improve on over the winter. And one's putting. Just get a putting mat. And if you, you know, if you don't have a putting mat, if you just have some short carpet, just hit, you know, really put some gates. You know, you can literally just get two glasses or two books and work on face control, that you're always starting it on that right line. I mean, that's going to pay huge dividends. You know, such a huge percentage of putting, and that it's really, you know, we can talk about lots of things, but, you know, I talk about this in putter fitting. If we can get if you can get your wheel aligned right, if we can get your distance control right, which again, these new putters are great with that. Now you need to do some work as well. And you get your start line right, you're going to be a great putter, period, full stop. You know, obviously there's a green reading factor, but from a pure stroke standpoint, I don't really care what your path is. If we can get those three things right, things are going to be really good. And the other one is speed training. You know, you can do a lot of speed training without hitting a golf ball. So there's, you know, coming out, whether you're in Indiana or up in Chicago or anywhere where it's cold, and unfortunately that's half the country right now, you know, and you care about your golf game, you know, even if you can't hit a ball for 6 months, you could do some great gains specifically in putting and speed. The great thing about speed is everybody thinks about it from a driver perspective, which they should, but wouldn't it be great if your 7-iron goes 5 yards longer? You know, that speed carries over. Certainly everybody's focused on driver, but once you have that extra gear or whatever, however you want to put it, that goes throughout the bag. That will help all aspects of your game. So yeah, for all those poor people, and I was one of them for a majority of my life, who are snowbound or will be snowbound soon, you know, grab two books, grab two glasses, grab a couple golf balls and your putter, and you can come out in the spring really ready to go.
Yeah, I'm fortunate enough. I have one of those birdie ball mats for putting. So I'm definitely wanting to set that up. And then I'm glad you brought up speed, because, you know, the hot topic right now is the ball rollback. And we can dive into that if you'd like. But, you know, one of the guys that I'm really fascinated by is Kyle Berkshire, because, yeah, he bombs the ball. That's what everybody wants to do. But, you know, he also hits his 7-iron like 240 yards or whatever it is. So it's like, man, I know I can't do that by any means. But, you know, if I can improve my length throughout my bag, then that would definitely go a long way as far as, you know, getting the ball as close to the hole as possible and then, you know, going from there.
Yeah, again, I mean, we don't need to get into all the data, but from a strokes gain perspective, right, that distance is just so critical. You know, and again, it's partly off the tee, right? If you can hit an extra 10 yards, so that's one club shorter. But if you get 5 to 8 yards with that, you know, that's another club shorter. And, you know, that same hole you've always been, maybe it's been driver 6-iron or driver 5-iron, that's hard to hit the green with that club. But all of a sudden, if it's now driver 7-iron or driver 8-iron, now you got a fighting chance. So again, speed is a great way to come out of it. And obviously, yeah, the rollback is, it's out there. You know, there's lots of really good, and I would argue really bad information going on social media and Twitter. You know, be careful what you read. I mean, we've put out, Chip Brewer, our CEO, has put out a statement for Callaway and the Topgolf Callaway brands. And, you know, I strongly recommend everybody go and read that. I support Chip and agree with everything he says. You know, we think we make the best golf balls right now in the current rules. And in 4 to 6 years, you know, we've got an incredible engineering team who continues to do really cool things. And we're confident we're going to make great golf balls that conform to the rules of golf and are going to be as long as anything out there. Come 2028 for the tour pros and come 2030 for non-tour pros like me and you and my guests, all the listeners out there. So, you know, it's part of the USGA's job. I mean, I've worked with them, you know, a lot over 24 years. I had nothing to do with this. We've got a separate team who handles the golf balls here, but it will affect fitting. You know, it's a good reminder for everyone. Please don't wait till 2030, but everyone should go get fit for their golf ball. It's the one piece of equipment used on every shot. It's so critical to your performance off the tee. It's so critical to performance on short game, on how your irons perform. You know, sometimes if your irons are out in the right spin window, you know, people like, I can't hold the greens, or, you know, I'm hitting flyers or whatever the case. And, you know, we can help with that, getting you in the right golf ball. So Yeah, the rollback is interesting. It's the USGA's job to govern the, you know, govern. They've got a tough job. Again, we support what they do. We support the game of golf. But to me, it's a reminder how important golf ball fitting is. And again, please don't wait till 2030 on that. Go do that. Go do that this year so you can come out in the spring ready to go and play one golf ball for every shot of every round year round.
Yeah, and I'll attest to, you know, you helped us out a little bit with that. And the, you know, for myself, you said that the Chrome Soft XLS sounded like a good ball. And, you know, when I'm standing over the ball and I have an XLS on the ground, I can tell you that my confidence is better than, you know, I'm standing over the ball hitting a different one. And it's, you know, because I know, like, hey, this is the ball for me. This is the ball that I need to play. And I'm scared of losing them, so I don't play them as often as I should. But, you know, still, like, knowing, like, hey, this is a good ball. This is the one for me. Like, it's another confidence level that I have. And as somebody that is a mental head case on the golf course, every little bit helps. And that has definitely helped.
Yeah, I certainly understand budget constraints, right? Golf isn't cheap. And, you know, but, and you're right. I'm glad you have that confidence. And one of the things that just goes with that, right, is that repeatability. If you're not using your golf ball and you wind up a little short or you go get along, there's always that, well, was that me or was that because I was using a lower spin ball? Or did I come up short because I was using a higher spin ball? Right. You know, that's one of the big things out there. Or, you know, if you use a ball, the one that's 95 compression, the one's 50 compression, you know, depending on your swing speed and your head delivery, that can be significant yardage off the tee, right? Boy, I thought I hit that one pretty good, but usually I'm past the bunker and now I'm 5 yards short of it. So I certainly understand that everybody can, you know, can afford to do that. But if scoring is important and developing that consistency and you know, making each shot a learning opportunity, again, do your best. I know you do. And I want to encourage everyone else to, I've said this and I mean it, I'd rather them play the wrong golf ball, but use it all the time than use 20 different golf balls. Now, ideally the right golf ball all the time, that's the winning combination. That's what we really right. want to get every two, but even using the wrong ball, at least being consistent, then you can base some judgments off of that for the future.
Yeah. So, you know, we've got the ball good. We've talked about the putter, you know, we've mentioned that you'll be in the area at some time in, you know, early of the year. Maybe we can get together and, you know, at least you and I can go over the putter a little bit in person, because I'm excited about that for sure.
Yeah, I'm finalizing. There's a PGA of Indiana PGA section event. I think it's in February. I'm trying to make some final plans there. So yeah, hopefully we'll be able to hook up in February and do a little putter fitting and talk more golf as needed then, for sure.
Yeah, that would be great. And then, you know, the next thing that would be on the list, you know, I've mentioned on here before, my clubs kind of have like a rotation of like a 3-year rotation, 4-year rotation for my wife. But, you know, the next club that would be in that rotation would be the driver. And the Paradigm is, by every meaning of the word, hot. And that is one thing that I am hoping that I get a little extra Christmas money. And I can also, you know, dabble into the Paradigm world.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, not just the driver, but it's been an overwhelming success from a tour. You know, I believe we still have more tour wins than anyone else. And really interesting, you know, the thing that the stat that our tour team's most excited about is usage from non-paid players, meaning players who don't have a driver deal, they're not under any contract, they can choose any driver that they want. They can choose whatever driver they think is best for them. And if you look at the global tours, we were number one in that in 2024. Excuse me, it's 2023 still. We were number one in that in 2023 from a global usage on all tours from the driver. That's really great. Now, obviously, the number of tour wins had with success at Ryder Cup, success of the tour championship, right? That's all great as well. It started off with a tour win in Hawaii and then just kept on rolling, another one at Pebble Beach by a non-staffer. I can't even think of all of them that we've had this year. So Paradigm has really been great, certainly from a driver perspective, but I almost think it's a shame because the driver has been so successful. It's kind of overshadowed the success we've had in fairway woods and hybrids. And irons. Now the irons aren't on tour because that's not the specific player type. But Paradigm was again, Paradigm Max, the family, was again the number one iron in golf this year from a sales perspective. So, you know, that's going into Fitting Bay, is that's winning the game with average people. That's winning the game day in and day out, proving that the performance is better for that player against whatever else that player wanted to hit, whatever else the fitter put in front of them. Now, we don't win everyone. We understand that. But we're very pleased and excited about the performance. Our R&D team is amazing, producing great product. And we've got great fitters out there getting people dialed into what's best for them. And a lot of times that's Paradigm. So it's been a fun year.
Yeah, I can personally attest to, you know, how I think the Paradigm felt. I did, my wife had a bridal shower up in Northern Indiana that I, you know, went up there with, dropped her off, and then went over to, I think it was Dick's, grabbed a Paradigm off the shelf, which I know that was a mistake, but I wanted to hit something, right? And I don't think the shaft combination and the head combination was, you know, what I needed at the time. And I honestly walked away just a little disappointed, but at the same time, like I don't want to say that I was happy, but the bank account appreciated that I didn't feel like, you know, that was going to be the next step. Well, fast forward a couple months, I think, again, had some free time, went over to the PJ Superstore here in Indy. And I was like, hey, you know, I asked a fitter this time. I didn't just ask, you know, the high school kid that was working. I was like, hey, do you mind if I hit a couple? He watched me hit, I think, two. And then he was like, all right, hey, hold on real quick. Let's switch some things around. And boy, did I think I text Owen right after I hit him. And I was like, I got to have it. Somehow I got to have it. And the length increase that I saw, which I don't know that I've ever seen. Probably 10, 15 yards maybe. And that was in the simulator. So I know that's, you know, maybe not on, you know, right on point by any means, but you know, the feeling of it, the couple times that I had a miss hit, but it still went farther than, you know, what I thought was a good one. Like it was incredible. And so I am in trouble as far as wanting the Paradigm for sure.
Well, hopefully you've been a good boy this year and Santa can bring some gift cards to help offset those penalties. Yeah. Yeah. It's great to hear. And you know, there's nothing wrong with just grabbing a driver and giving it a twirl, right? Every fitting's got to start somewhere. You know, hopefully the fitter's done a good pre-fit interview and talked to you. And in your case, it was just you going in. But that second time was great, right? You made two swings. The fitter got involved, made some changes. I love the fact you said, hey, it was 15 yards in the simulator. Again, just to, when the time comes, when you got the credit card ready to roll, take your gamer in, prove it to yourself. Maybe it was more than 15 yards. Maybe it was less, right? So, but it's great to see that. And again, not knowing, not remember, I know you've told me, not remember exactly what driver you play if you fit for it. But we get stories like that all the time about players who haven't been fit before. Maybe they self-fit. Their driver's 4, 5, 6 years old. We get stories often about 15 to 20 yards. That is not uncommon. Now, if you're playing a driver that's 2 years old and you were fit for it, probably not getting 20. You know, that's because, but if you haven't been fit, and your technology is, again, you get that 3, 4, 5, especially getting the 6 year range, you're giving up real technology and real performance. So, when you said 15 and you said, maybe, maybe not, I wouldn't blink at 15, not a one bit. In fact, I wouldn't even blink at 20. Because we see that with players with older technology who haven't been fit. And when they truly get dialed into the right loft with the right hosels, or cog settings, as we like to call them, the right shaft weight, you can get some big difference. Even with somebody like you who really moves the club head, you know, you've got a lot of club head speed, you move the club head well, you know, there's potentially even bigger gains also as you get that the off-center hip performance dialed in as well. So, yeah, I'm excited for you when the time comes.
Yeah, because I currently have an Epic Max LS, and I love it solely for the fact that I can hit it off the deck very well. I can't explain why or how, but I almost feel more confident hitting that off the deck than I do my four wood. It feels great. I love it. So if I can get that same feeling from the Paradigm, Owen better watch out, because I'm going driver off the deck every time.
Well, that's a shot not many people have. So if you've got it, we'll get you dialed in with that as well. Not a normal part of the fitting process for the driver, though, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Hey, I'm not gonna use a tee this time. Can I see that? Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah, and I also thought it was, you know, I've always heard like the triple diamond, you know, being more along like the pro side, or like the, you know, the really good drivers of the ball side. And that was actually the club head that they put me in after that second swing. And the guy was like, yeah, you can move the club head, so let's go ahead and get you in this. And I was like, okay, if that's, you know, if that's what you think. And then sure enough, I was blown away.
Yeah, that's I'm going to just touch on that if I may. I mean, that's one of the things I think that gets out there, right? You know, we have Paradigm, we have Paradigm X, we have the Triple Diamond. I think some people, unfortunately, and boy, I wish we could get away from this, say, oh, I'm a mid or high handicap, therefore I can only hit this driver. I'm a mid or high handicap, therefore I can't play this driver. And I got news for you. The golf club nor the golf ball have any idea what your handicap is. All the golf ball and the club head know is how you are delivering that. So, you know, there has been tour players who use our draw models because they don't want to miss it right, or maybe they've got a right bias and they want to have one club that's easy to turn over in their bag, or maybe just their head delivery is that's what they need, especially high spin players. And we see this often, even with some higher handicaps, especially people with higher handicaps and a lot of speed. A lot of times they're kind of coming over the top a little bit with an open face, and that generates a lot of spin. You know, it's not uncommon to see 4,500, even 5,000 RPM on a driver. Well, if you got a lot of speed, we need to take that down. Well, the triple diamond is much more about spin reduction than it is those other things. So, you know, again, I can't preach that enough. We do not fit off of handicap. Yes, handicap gives us some guidelines of, hey, this might be where we want to start, but that is definitely not the decision-making process. You know, we really, what matters is club delivery. What matters is ball speed, launch angle, and spin rate, and how we can get that closest to optimal for you. And everybody's a little different. So, you know, there's, again, what are we going to call it? An 8 handicap now? Is that safe? Can we call you an 8 handicap?
I'll go 9. I don't want to get ahead of myself.
So let's call you 9 handicap. I mean, there's literally 9 handicaps who would play all of our every different model because of that's how they deliver it. Not everybody has the speed you do. Some people who have the speed you do are really low spin players. Guess what? They're not going to be in triple diamond because even they have the same club head speed. They deliver it. They deliver their the way that it's coming in the golf ball is different. So again, just being a 9 handicap or a 3 handicap or even a 30 handicap doesn't necessarily it should not dictate which driver or even which iron set you should be playing. And the same goes with the golf ball. You know, there's really low spin players who are going to need to play a Chrome Soft X ball. And there's really good players. I'm not saying I'm a good player. I'm a 5 handicap, but I don't play the Chrome Soft X because I'm a really high spin player. So I use a ball that has a little bit less spin on the approach shots and around the green because I the way I deliver the club head, I produce a lot of spin on my own. In fact, probably too much. So I use the equipment to tone that down. So again, I hear you, but I want everybody to remember, you know, handicap is not a real fitting tool. I mean, maybe it's a guideline to get started, but maybe, and not for sure.
Right. Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. So I'm glad you touched on that. So yeah, we're looking at some incredible, you know, numbers from the Paradigm. We're looking for some incredible numbers from the AI. So like, what does that kind of success do for you guys at Callaway?
Well, I think, I mean, you know, we want to be a leadership position in the industry in every facet. You know, that's something that our CEO Chip Brewer really drives us on. And, you know, and we all work very hard. We have an incredible team here, but we're ultimately judged on what other people think of us, right? We're ultimately judged on how, you know, do the tour players put the new clubs in the bag? We're ultimately judged on how many successful fittings we do and how much that leads into sales. We're ultimately judged by what our market share numbers are. Do people want to buy our clubs over our competitors and at what rate, right? So, you know, we're a big company. Obviously, we've got Top Golf, we've got Top Tracer, we've got Travis Matthew under the modern golf brand that we are, and that's great. But you know, a big year for us is great. You know, we'll probably think about it for one day and get right back at it for 2024. Right. I mean, Just because we produced a great club last year does not guarantee we're going to produce a great club for next year. Now, I've seen them all. I've hit them all. I'm really excited for what 2024 is going to be. I think AI is going to remain undefeated as we continue to look at the different product categories. But, you know, yeah, we're proud of our efforts. You know, it's always nice to feel wanted. And, you know, the industry tells us if we're wanted or not. And this year was great, again, from a tour perspective, as well as from a on course with average golfers and in fitting bays and from a sales perspective. But all that means is we got to outdo it next year, right? We got to play leapfrog with our own product. We don't want to launch anything that's just as good. Everything needs to be better, and not just marginally better. You know, we really preach, you know, pleasingly different, demonstrably superior. And every year we're trying to be that. Every product is more pleasing, is more superior to the product before it. That's something Ely Callaway started however many years ago, Ely, 30 years ago now. You know, we want to continue to drive that success and drive products that we're proud of, that we're proud to recommend to people and we're proud to see in bags, whether it's Xander Schauffele or Rose Zhang or whether it's Caleb and Owen or me.
Yeah, that's awesome. I have two suggestions if you want to pass it along to your team.
Hold on, let me get some note-taking material. Fire away.
Yeah. All right. We need a red, white, and blue driver. We need an American driver. I promise you, I would go into debt before, or you know, I would buy that driver and go into debt before I didn't if we had that red, white, and blue driver. Just throwing that out there.
We'll have to see if Callaway Customs, that's an option for next year. We got some really cool red, white, and blue golf balls, some really cool red, white, and blue gloves. You know, I think we've done some cool head covers in the past, but I'll make a mental note and pass on the desire for a driver as well.
Yeah, so I can say that I have the putter cover. I don't know if it's one of one. I'm assuming it's not, but I won it in a random drawing. It's like the red, white, and blue shield with the star in the middle. That's awesome. I have the gloves for sure. Let's see what else. I really like the look of the 360 fade balls.
Yeah.
I don't know if that ball would be for me, but I can tell you I really like the look of it being the red, white, and blue.
Well, I'm not going to give anything away, but I like your chances in 2024 to fit you into the right golf ball and making fade a possibility. So
nice. Perfect. Okay, that I'm my bank account screwed for next year. That's good to know.
Let's just keep this a secret. Don't tell any of your family members. Just between me and you.
Yeah. Nobody's gonna listen. Nobody, block that part out. Second suggestion. I think I've mentioned it to you before, but the 882 style putter. If that one came out again, that would be another one that I would be in trouble with. I don't know why. I can't explain why I have such an infatuation with it. But that one would get me.
Yeah, we've done several versions of those, but it's been a number of years now. In fact, I think it's going on 6 or 7 years till we've had a heel shafted toe flow blade of that style. Again, I can think of at least four that Callaway/Odyssey Callaway brand that Odyssey has produced over the years. My guess is there's more than four, but yeah, it's been a few years. That putter is, you know, it's got a bit of a cult following. Obviously it's literally been popular since the 1940s. I've got some, just because of my golf history, I know a lot of the details of that going way back, its origins and how it's kind of progressed to the industry, you know, but it's a really limited market. You know, it's extremely toe down. It's extremely toe heavy looking, but the sweet spot's typically actually more towards the heel because that hosel is so long. So it's really an interesting putter, but the people who like it, and it sounds like you're in that that very small boat, but the people in that boat love it, and they keep screaming to send them more. So I will pass it along. No promises. Again, we haven't done it in a while. Maybe we'll do it again in the future, but there's certainly some really great Odyssey models like that. Probably need to jump on Second Swing or eBay or Callaway pre-owned to see if you can snag a backup.
Yeah, for sure. I can tell you, the one thing that I really like about it is the look of the hosel going straight into the head of the club. That's something that I've always really liked when I looked at it, and that's something that drew my eye. And I was in Myrtle Beach, and I am very much regretting it now, but I was in Myrtle Beach a couple years ago, And Dad and I went to this, you know, podunk golf store that's down there, one of the hundreds. And I think it was maybe an Arnold Palmer version of it.
That's one of the earlier models, or could be one of the earlier models, and they also reintroduced that. But yeah, that was originally designed by Arnold Palmer, and then there was a name change when he left that company and became the 8802 number that most people use it with. There's been some other versions. Ben Crenshaw didn't use any of those. He used a different model that he used, maybe the most famous golfer ever to use that. Greg Norman used it for a while, but yeah, it's they're out there.
And it was like $60, and I was like, man, I'll be able to find it somewhere else. And I have not, and I've kicked myself ever since. I wanted that one so bad.
Well, they're out there again. The interwebs is a great thing. If you search hard enough and are willing to pay the bills, you can find one.
For sure. Yeah, I bet. All right. So moving away from Callaway, we're going to talk about a little bit of ourselves here for a minute. Mainly, we'll talk about you and the exciting summer of golf that you had joining the Hole in One Club.
Yeah.
That's something that has missed me still. The closest I have is a video of it lipping out. I don't know why I told Dad to record that certain shot, but I was like, hey, I'm feeling it. You know, let's record it. And you can see in the video, it lips out. It's still crushing to watch, but you know, you had one go in, you joined Owen. One of my buddies, his dad has done it. So very few people that I know actually have one. I've seen two in person. So I got to, you know, get the feeling secondhand. But what was that like seeing yourself hit one?
I've been playing golf for a long time, and to finally get one was really, it was just fun. I was playing with Zach, which on Twitter everybody knows is a very average dad or average dad. He was out for a club fitting. We went over to Goat Hill on number 9. And again, this is not trying to brag, but I still, it was literally a perfect shot. You know, I was saying, hey, the pin was kind of back right. You know, I aimed at just about 2 yards left of that. You know, it was just a pretty much a full sand wedge, just a stock sand wedge. It went up, and as soon as I hit it, the ball was, you know, halfway to the hole. And we got paired with this guy named Chris. We had never met before. Really good guy, good, decent player, fun to play with. Said that, you know, something like, hey, that's really good, or that looks great. And, you know, it landed maybe a pace past the hole, took one hop and started spinning and literally went in the center of the hole with a perfect pace. So, you know, I've had two lip outs that I'm aware of. I've hit on par threes before. You know, I've hit the stick not a lot, but 4 or 5 times over the years. I've hit the stick on the fly or on a hop. You know, honestly, the number of times the ball's landed, you know, within a foot or two of the hole is not that many. I mean, I could, you know, think of 4 or 5. So for one to finally go in was pretty great. And then I don't know if you saw it, but my son got a hole in one here just 2 weeks ago. And it's interesting.
Yep.
I'll tell the story really briefly, but pin was all the way up. We could only see like the top 2/3 of it. And I hit a shot. It didn't look really good. In fact, we got pairs of the husband and wife, and the husband said, I think that's in the hole. I said, no, it's definitely not in the hole. My son, right after we got up, and the guy kind of joked like, well, that one's got to be in the hole or something like that. And Tyler and I jumped in the cart, and we were a good 80 yards away. And so we're seeing more and more of the flag stick and still hadn't seen a golf ball. We're kind of looking at each other, getting the stupid grin. And we finally got up to the green, and there was one about 8 feet short of the hole, but only one ball. So there was two ball marks, one about 8 inches right. I mean, literally pin high right. And one about 12 to 14 inches, just a little past and left. We're pretty sure that, well, we know that my son's landed right. We didn't see it go in because of the flat, because of the bunker blocking it, but his bounced again, landed 8 inches pin high, obviously bounced forward and then somehow spun back. And mine landed just left and spun back about 8 feet, little uphill 8 to 9 footer for birdie. But yeah, it's been really cool. I've got to see my oldest son. He got his out in Utah, at South Mountain, which is a really cool golf course, a few years ago. I was playing with two of my brothers as well. So they were there, witnessed it, and now got to obviously see mine, and now got to see my son Tyler's. We have I have a new son-in-law. My daughter got married a few months ago. He's a golf nut, diehard, and we're making pretty good fun of him that he doesn't have one yet. So he's got to get on the family bus. So
I feel that pain. I tell him I feel that pain. Owen we have a couple, you know, joint passwords in the bags universe. And I can tell you there's at least two or three that are hole in one Arrowhead 2022. And I'm like, man, that's awesome. I can't wait. I know it's coming. I believe that I can do it. I can tell you I was really hoping that I would get close, in our birdie challenge day when we were raising money, for the Travis Sherritt Growing the Game Scholarship. We were out at Arrowhead all day, you know, played multiple par threes. And then towards the end of the day, we were really hoping to get a couple more, you know, birdies. So Owen and I split it up on back-to-back par threes, and, you know, we had some people with us and, you know, watching us. And I was really hoping that I could just get one to fall, but, you know, not in the cards this year. But I'm determined. I'll get it.
Yeah. Part of it, I mean, I hate to say it, right, because golf is such a skill sport and it's so hard. When we think about how hard it is to get the club face square and the angle of approach right and control low point with the right swing speed and the right shaft angle and the ball and the club head and the wind and the, you know, for it ever to go in, it's amazing, right? But you hear stories, and I believe Ben Hogan only ever had two hole-in-ones in his whole life. I believe that's true. And I don't know if Golf Digest has ran this, but I remember 20 years ago, 25, 15, I don't remember the exact time, Golf Digest had a little thing of like most hole-in-ones. I believe it was like a little old lady from Northern California had like 43. Or that was like, jeez, the most at the time that he went. So like Ben Hogan made two. And this, I'm sure this woman's a great player. I'm not belittling her in any way.
Right.
But, you know, I'm guaranteeing you Ben Hogan was better than her, right? I
mean, yeah, so, no doubt.
And so, yeah, it's just one of those things where, you know, I played golf, I mean, essentially for, 37 years before I got mine. And I don't know, I shudder to think what the math of that is, because I haven't kept track of every round, but it's a lot. I mean, I was 0 for like 7 trillion before it finally went in, so.
Right, yeah, that's... that's a lot. I was looking at, so I use 18 birdies to track all of my stuff, and
on course data.
I was, yeah. And I was really, I'm patiently waiting for the 2023 summary to come out, you know, that I can dive into. But, as of right now, the 2022 summary is still there. And, during 2022, I had like 838 strokes or something like that. And I'm thinking, man, and not one of those could have been a hole in one. I'm sure, like, you know, 400 of those were included in three putts, but, you know, I'm really wanting to get that one. So, you know, that's something to look forward to. I always tell Owen, and I tell my dad, if it's on a certain hole, at the course that we play all the time at Arrowhead, there's a little, I guess you'll call it retention pond. I'm not sure how clean that water is. I cannot confirm, you know, if there wouldn't be all kinds of stuff in there, but if I hit a hole in one on that hole, that's the first place that I'm going.
Huh? Well, I didn't have a planned celebration or anything, but when it does happen, you might be surprised. I literally just held my hands in the air and turned around and looked at the guys. It kind of takes your breath away. Especially if you never had one before. You know, I've got a couple friends who have a handful of them. You know, and they it's still exciting for them, but that first one is special. And, you know, I'd got to the point, you know, obviously you want it to be a good shot, right? But I was the point, like, even if it hits a cart path, three trees and a dog running through, if it winds up in the
yes,
wall, I'll take it at this point after all.
I'll take it.
But I was super grateful. Both mine and both of my sons, were essentially perfect shots that went in the hole. So
nice.
The law of averages, a little skill and a lot of luck, and you'll get yours.
Yeah, I've always heard it's better to be lucky than good on a golf course, and I'll believe that for sure.
Yeah, it's coming. It's coming. Again, get enough par threes, it'll happen.
Yeah. So, you know, we know my off-season plan. It's putting. It's I probably want to work on my chipping just a little bit. I lost that during the summer. That was something I've never experienced before, was losing the chipping ability. That was something that I always kind of hung my hat on, you know, growing up in my early stages of golf, and definitely now, like, you know, yeah, driving the ball is great and I love hitting it far and all that stuff, but like, I knew my irons weren't great. So if I could at least get it close, then, you know, I knew that I could chip up and give myself a decent putt chance, or, you know, something like that. But, earlier in the season, that's something that I lost. And I don't want to do that again. So that's on the list. So, you know, being out in California, do you have an off season? Like, Does the weather get bad enough where you're just like, all right, hey, I got to take off 10 weeks?
No, definitely not 10 weeks. I played on Saturday. It was 38 degrees when we teed off. I don't know why. As you know, I'm from the Midwest. I live in Chicago most of my life. I had cart mittens. I had a winter cap. I had layers, and I could not. I was freeze, literally teeth chattering. I had about a 20-foot birdie putt on six, I think it was. And I was standing there and couldn't stop my teeth from chattering. It's been a long time since that's happened, but you know, we'll get, if you want to play golf, you could play 365 days a year where I live. I'm very blessed with that. Yeah. You know, I live reasonably close to the coast, pretty darn close to the coast in Carlsbad. I drove to a town called Temecula, which is a little far away, which is why it's cold. But if you're willing to pay and stay near the ocean, you can play 365. So, you know, it's interesting because of the holidays, we'll have our family, we'll have all of our family in for different parts of Christmas. So I'll get, probably three rounds in with my boys, both my two sons, my son-in-law. So I'll get a little Christmas golf in. January and February tends to be really busy, from a work perspective, new product launches, new fitting tools. So, I don't want to say I take a break in January and February because it's not voluntary. I'm not taking it off because of weather, but right. I tend to get some travel and work gets in the way. Yes, even golf is work. So January and February, I probably will not get as many rounds as I'd like in, but I probably could. It's just a matter of priorities and timing. But my off season's a little different. You know, I do try to do, I change my weightlifting a little bit. This time of year, I'm trying to be in the gym I'm in the gym 5 days a week, essentially every week of the year. The only time I'm not, and I do 6 days, depending on what time my tee time is on Saturday. So I have a later tee time in on Saturday. I don't work out on Sundays, but I do change my lifting routine a little bit in the winter. Just for some things I think helps me stay healthy, both golf wise and life wise. But no, my off season is there isn't any. I'm very blessed to be where I'm at and to do what I do. It's not Chicago. I love Chicago, but I don't miss Chicago this time of year.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, I've been to California for work. I have not been to California for pleasure. But you know, knowing that the California or the Callaway HQ is out there in Carlsbad, that's definitely on the list. So, you know, maybe I can talk Owen into, you know, maybe not next year, the year after or something, you know, getting a trip together to go out there and visit and play that kind of golf. Definitely something that's on the list.
As I said before, there's a standing invite to give you a good tour of the place, get you fit up, and I'll take you over to Goat Hill, and you can see where I made my hole in one and have a blast. There's lots of good golf around here. But everybody who comes to SoCal should head over to the Goat and get to experience that for themselves too.
All right. Well, I'll see you next summer for sure. If Amelia, if you're listening, we'll make it work somehow. But yeah, you know, thanks for joining. If you have any last words, feel free. You know, otherwise I'll end us out here.
No, it's great. Caleb, I appreciate having you on. I wish Owen could be here. You know, I know you've ducked all the Purdue but basketball talk during this conversation. You stuck to golf. We should have a whole different pod on that. But I'll finish with Boiler Up. And I do hope everybody's having a great time playing golf, finished up the year strong. And again, reach out to me at VGolfman on Twitter with any fitting questions. I'm always available. I really do my best to answer all of those. Just try to have a good time on there and hopefully bless people's lives a little bit with some knowledge and some golf fun.
Nice. Yeah. We'll hope that we can, you know, beat the tall guy again, like we did last year. So, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks, you know, to Michael for joining. And this has been another episode of Below Average Golfers. Thanks for listening.